the broadcast now, and we are live. Good evening, folks. This is John Johnson. We're on Radio Edutalk and broadcasting from Glasgow in Scotland. And I've got an interesting show. Last week I failed to get two people in the room at the same time. So it's going much better this week because I have succeeded in getting Anya Rolinska, I hope I've managed the name right, and Ian Field, who I always go to call Ian in Sheffield from his Twitter name. And we're going to be talking about hands-on ICT MOOC. And folk that have listened to the show have heard us refer to MOOCs and things occasionally and talk about them, but I think this one's a wee bit different. And first, Anya, could you maybe kick off by just giving us a wee bit of background as to where you've been and who you are and the sorts of things you do?
Okay, so hello everybody. My name is Anya Rolinska, so you got the pronunciation right. And I work at the University of Glasgow as an English for academic purposes tutor and also as a technology enhanced learning and teaching officer at the School of Modern Languages and Cultures. But on top of that, I like to keep myself busy with all sorts of different projects. And last autumn in 2014, I volunteered to be a facilitator on the hands-on ICT MOOC mentioned by you, John. So, and I also do quite a lot of online facilitation for other organizations. And I'm just about to finish my master's in digital education. So that's my background.
Brilliant. Sounds like an interesting life. And Ian.
Good evening, John. Good evening, everybody. Nice to be back. My name's Ian Guest. I currently work in an all-girls school in Sheffield, where I'm the head of e-learning. And I started, the first half of my career was spent teaching physics and as a head of physics. And then I moved into a city learning centre as a curriculum development consultant and worked there for a while, and from there into my current post. I wouldn't say I'm a serial MOOCer, but I am certainly interested by the notion of them, which is how I found myself in the hands-on ICT MOOC. And it was certainly a very different experience, as I'm sure we'll get into during the course of the show. Before we go any further, can I just congratulate you, John, on your 10th birthday on your blog? Let's do it on air and have it recorded.
Yeah, happy birthday, blog. unbelievable that you can... It's a quarter of a million words that have been misspelled and mangled by my fair hand over the last few years. So, quite surprising. This is sort of online... thing is really interesting, and MOOCs, which stands for, I think, Massive Open Online Course, have certainly got a lot of interest in education. I would say more in higher ed than in the school level, but does somebody want to just give us a background on, maybe Ian, you could give us what you think a MOOC is, and then Anya, you could tell us a bit about hands-on ICT MOOC and just a sort of general overview.
Sure, John. I think if I'm correct, and I'm sure somebody will post a rebuttal if I'm wrong, MOOCs, standing for Massive Open Online Course, began across in Canada and began through people like Stephen Downes and George Siemens and Alec Kouros, who were delivering conventional courses delivered online but wanted to open things up more widely to a wider audience. And they became latterly more commonly known as CMOOCs, connectivist MOOCs, which essentially often don't have a specific fixed curriculum, if you will, or set of learning objectives which are clearly articulated. The learning is more in the making of the connections. And from there, MOOCs became more widely developed and accepted and taken on by higher education in general, and more specifically in specific organizations, linked with the release of course materials from places like MIT. So the MOOC that they started to deliver, the MOOCs that they started to deliver were more clear in terms of a set of learning objectives. This is the scheme of work or syllabus, and this is what you'll work through. In all cases, they tend to be fairly time limited, so it might be between 3 to 10 weeks. And as you said, mainly starting from higher education, but I do think they have a penetration beyond that. So perhaps not so much with younger people, but certainly with a really wide cross-section of ages, I think. Often people who have long since left formal education, who are perhaps coming back to it in a different way, and certainly incredibly internationally. And that was very true of the hands-on ICT MOOC that I was lucky to be part of.
Anya, maybe, so how, we've talked briefly about X-MOOCs and C-MOOCs, the two sort of big splits. Where does the sort of hands-on ICT MOOC fit in that sort of spectrum?
It's an interesting question, and it's kind of I've been looking, I've been thinking about it myself for some time now, and I don't know, maybe Ian might agree or disagree, but maybe somewhere in between. I think the main difference, the value that the hands-on ICT MOOC has brought into the, let's say, world of MOOCs is that it's kind of relies on the idea of project-based learning. So actually, it's not so much theory-driven. I mean, there is theory there in form of, you know, input, video input, for example, and some readings and links to blogs and other spaces with you know, with information. But what the MOOC is, or was, asking the participants to do was to apply that knowledge to the particular context, so particular professional context. So it was all about application. So each of them, each participant had a, you know, particular project they were developing and sharing with others for the peer review. So that would mean that there is a bit of, there is a structure there. You know, there was a sequence of activities, so that kind of maybe makes it similar to an X-MOOC, which is also you know, well structured. But there is a lot of interaction there, and it's not only about knowledge consumption, but it's about, well, creating content in form of those projects individuals were working on and then sharing with each other.
Brilliant. So it's kind of taken, I think, maybe the best of both
worlds.
Things. Yeah, and it's been run several times.
Yes.
And its audience, our participants, the participants tend to be who takes this MOOC.
In general,
no. Go ahead, Anya.
In general, or in terms hands-on. Hello.
Hello. Yep. In hands-on. Hello.
Okay. Yes. Yep. So when it comes to hands-on, I actually have some statistics in front of me, and we had a good mix of people from from across sectors, and with 34% so the average, for example, an experienced teachers, right, and an average of the years spent teaching is 14. People with higher education, higher education 34%, and secondary 33%. So a mix of educators, and also when it comes to kind of involvement with technology, and when it comes to them assessing their ICT skills, again, most of them perceive themselves as moderately good or good users, and quite a few as experienced or confident users. So I think that was also it was interesting, and certainly helped the participants deal with the various technologies we use on the MOOC.
Yeah, so it's aimed at educators to, I guess, improve their delivery, improve the sort of education resources they create and the learning experiences they create. Is that fair?
Yeah, I think that's a very fair observation, John. The majority of people there were. But speaking from a participant's point of view, the people with whom I worked fairly closely came from a really eclectic mix. So there were quite a number of people who, as is often the case in MOOCs, who dipped in and out and came to see us every so often and then perhaps faded away, and perhaps some who were working behind the chronology of it and coming along a little bit later. But certainly Grant sticks in my mind as one of the people with whom I worked, who was an educator in Australia working at secondary level and a design technology teacher. Then there was, I'm just trying to think of the names now, Natalia, who worked in Russia and Uzbekistan coordinating medical practitioners and online learning for them. Wow. And then Ida, who I think was from Portugal and worked in with learners who had assistive needs. So they were the people with whom I worked closely and a really eclectic mix, which... So to give you a completely different perspective than if you were working with the people who you normally work with day in and day out. So it was great to get that perspective and an international perspective too.
Yeah, I mean, that just generally learning, I think, very often becomes really interesting when you even just go and cross-sector. I think primary teachers can learn a lot from watching lecturers or secondary teachers can learn a lot from nurseries and things like that, so a great opportunity to do that. How long did the MOOC last?
It was 5 weeks in total.
Right, so that's quite a manageable amount of time for many people. Quite a few things I've joined in have been a bit longer than that, and I find myself sagging a bit after a while, or just real life gets in the way. Could you maybe just give us a wee sort of rough idea of the content covered in the 5 weeks?
Yes, so we kind of followed the Learning Design Studio cycle, which is about kind of imagining some kind of a challenge, coming up with a puzzle you want to solve in your particular context, imagining some kind of scenario, and then trying to work with that scenario by researching it and kind of trying to identify the typical learners, for example, or users you're going to work with, and then thinking even more deeply about the context and trying to work out what the challenges are, what the opportunities are, and then coming up with an activity. And by an activity here, I don't mean it could be something small, but it could be something bigger. So it could be just one activity, like let's say an hour-long workshop, but it could be a whole course. So that again provided the level of challenge was kind of depended on the learner. You could do as little as you wanted or as much as you wanted. So I thought that was something really good, because it would appeal to learners of different levels of skill, for example. So then once that kind of activity, the initial proposal, the learner would came up with the initial proposal, then we would be researching activities undertaken in similar but other contexts to learn from those contexts, so a little bit of research, and then building slowly a prototype and testing it. And obviously, that peer review process, there would be a constant peer review, either informal or on the forums, where learners would submit, share links to their, let's say, prototypes or their activities, their proposals. And then every week, those are kind of a, let's say, more formal peer review or mentoring activity. And then based on the feedback, they would refine and revise the their activity. But again, I'm stressing that activity it can be something small, but it can be something big. So people were working on different things. So Grant, mentioned by Ian, he was working actually on the whole course, was trying to devise the whole course. Other people were maybe thinking of something smaller, like a workshop. But yeah, brilliant. So that was the kind of a cycle.
Yeah,
they were working with.
So a couple of questions just coming out of that. What sort of space did people work in? I mean, some MOOCs I've been on have been, you know, there's a piece of software that everybody uses, a forum or something like this, and other ones have been much more, you just use all sorts of things from hashtags to blog posts and things, and they all sort of mash up in a messy way. Mm-hmm. So did you have a particular set of tools you were using for communication?
Yes, so we were using a virtual learning environment, Canvas, and that was a change from the previous pilot, because the pilot 2, the course was using a Moodle.
Mm-hmm.
So that was a change. And Canvas is kind of in structure similar to Moodle. So the main kind of interaction would be on the forums. But we were also using Ilda, which is another environment where we had templates of those different, you know, activities that were comprising the homework, and to help the learners come up with the, you know, with those proposals and prototypes, etc. I mentioned earlier, and then within the Canvas, there were different types of activities. So, for example, we had that peer mentoring activity, and also we were using kind of integrated journals, kind of type of blog. So that looks like it was a kind of a closed space, but people were using, you know, their own spaces as well. So, for example, the lady mentioned by Ian, Ida, not sure how to pronounce her name. She was using other tools outside the Canvas environment, and then just simply sharing links on the forums to her blog or whatever she was using. And we were also using social media, mostly Twitter. And also, there was a dedicated YouTube channel. And then on top of that, every week, we would have a kind of a convergence session online using Google Hangouts.
Right, okay.
So I hope I've mentioned everything about...
It sounds like a really interesting mix.
Can't think of anything else, please.
Ian, can you maybe give us an example of... And a wee bit detail of a project that somebody, either yourself or somebody else, did over the 5 weeks?
I could certainly give you the project that I did, but perhaps it'd be better if I mentioned Grant, just simply to give someone else a bit of kudos, because I thought he took on quite a big chunk of learning. They were trying to develop an online course, if you will, to support students doing technological design, secondary students, this is, of, I guess, around about 16 age, so what we in the UK would call GCSE students, or at least in England, I'm sorry. And it was an environment where they could have access to the learning resources, plus... access to each other, in a sense, be able to support each other as peers, be able to consider each other's design process, and also an environment where they could undertake creation and undertake the design itself. So the resources that were provided by the teacher and the learning that the students undertook were all taken in the same place. So it was the design of that Grant undertook.
Yeah, well, that seems quite a chunky piece of work to carry out, and this idea that, you know, as in MOOCs, people come in and out and drop in, when you're sort of relying on your peers learning, for some support or for peer assessment or critique. How did that work if somebody drops off the radar on the Thursday night just before they're meant to give you some feedback or something like that? Was that?
That's a good question, John. It really is. That's something that certainly concerned me, because I'd committed to the whole thing. I was going to undertake all the activities during the 5 weeks. And as you said, some of the activities do require peer feedback, and you are required to give peer feedback to others. Mm. That was a real strength of the course, provided there were people there to do it. Unfortunately, we had that nucleus within the English stream. There were several language streams, I think 8 possibly language streams.
My goodness.
7, was it? Thanks. Yeah. All running concurrently. So I was in the English stream. and as a result of that, that sort of narrowed down, if you will, the number of people who were available to provide that support for you. But there were sufficient people in English, and I think some of the other streams were actually far more... engaged. There were a far greater number of people involved, so perhaps they had fewer problems. It was only on a couple of occasions you were left perhaps waiting a little longer for feedback than you might ideally have, but people have lives outside of their learning, of course.
Yeah, I think that's at the end of it, is there a qualification, badge, acknowledgement?
Yeah, so as we said, there were 5 weeks, and at the end of each week, if you have participated in the forums and also in the end of week peer mentoring activity, then you would be given a badge for that particular week. And then once you've done, you know, all the weeks, then you will get a designer badge for the whole course, and there would be a certificate as well issued to you, a certificate of completion.
And would you see this, Ian, as forming part of your professional development and fitting in with whatever local requirements you have for CPD or professional learning?
Absolutely, John. The badges, less so. I'm a very staunch advocate of the open badge system, and was delighted to be able to increase the number of badges in my backpack, but that wouldn't fit into anything that we have in terms of local provision. But what it did do is it was clearly linked with the role that I perform in school, so it provided me with an environment where I could undertake learning at a very... It was in two senses. The actual activity itself allowed me to be able to develop a resource which I can deploy within school and which will be used later this year. But on a personal level, it also allowed me to become far more familiar with working in a MOOC environment with other people, providing peer feedback. And that actually is quite a tricky thing to do with other people of a professional status. Mm-hmm. And being able to be honest. I don't think we always achieved that. I think we were sometimes hanging back through whatever you would call it, politeness perhaps, or and I don't think we were perhaps as critical as we sometimes could have been. But certainly that I felt it was an incredibly powerful piece of professional development for me. I would advocate anybody to have a go at it, but It's no small undertaking if you're going to go through the whole thing. It's only 5 weeks, but it's demanding work. It's not just fluff and a little bit of design here and there. It really does make you think hard.
And have you got a sort of rough idea of the minimum and maximum amounts of time you would say spend in a week?
Well, personally, it was about... I initially intended, that was one of the, I think, warm-up activities, where what amount of time can you commit to this, or do you think it will take? And I thought it would be about 3-ish hours. It transpired that it was a fair bit longer than that. In order to participate fully, I mean, you could do the activities, but in order to be able to read other people's posts and be able to think about what they've done and provide them with, hopefully, some measure of valuable feedback, then it does require a little bit longer. But more you put in, the more you get out.
And also, you know, participants were, once you know that you're working on something that you're actually going to use later, or, you know, at the time when the course was actually happening, then you are happy to put in, you know, extra time and extra effort. And people are coming up with, you know, various activities, like videos, for example, presentations. So then it's not only just a, you know, time spent thinking about the ideas, but also even realizing that, putting that into a presentation, then recording yourself, you know, giving that presentation. You know, some people went as far as adding various sound effects and visual effects. So even the so it's not only the content, but also the form of the presentation. And I'm sure that takes a lot of time as well. So certainly, a lot of big time investment and effort investment, but hopefully worth it.
Another kind of interesting aspect to the course, I'm looking at the hands-on poster from the hands-on ICT site, and there's a sort of graphic of a poor teacher figuring out what to do and ending up exhausted. And there's a lovely wee graphic after that of the hands-on ICT mentored way, where the mentor is a wee angel floating and encouraging the participant along. And I'm thinking that's really interesting, because I mean some online learning is almost completely unmentored, and others they rely on sort of peer help. Could you maybe talk a wee bit, was that your role, I know we didn't use the word mentor, I don't think, Anya, but was that your role in this MOOC?
My role was more of a, you know, facilitator. So as a facilitator, I didn't really, for example, I didn't participate in those peer mentoring activities.
Right.
What I did was, and I mean, I wasn't the only facilitator; we had a whole group of facilitators. What our task was. We were kind of, you know, making sure that people are engaging, giving feedback as well on the forums. And also kind of every day we would come up, we would create a kind of a, I don't know, newsletter, let's call it, or a journal entry, which we would share with participants, just emphasizing the well, different things, goals, for example, for a given week, the activities. If when we kind of discovered that people were struggling with something, a bit of theory perhaps, so they didn't know how to approach a certain task, we would offer solutions, we would offer links to some resources. If we thought that somebody was doing was on the right track and other people were struggling with the particular thing, then we would kind of point them out in that direction.
Yeah.
So it was, I think the main task was to kind of be present there and encourage people to engage with their with the content and with each other as well. So that was the main role.
Facilitator's role. So were the mentors another sort of set of people, or were they from the participants? Or
that was participants. Obviously, I think like at the beginning, probably we were giving more feedback and by encouraging people to give feedback on each other's work, we were kind of easing them into that role of a mentor. And then in the peer mentoring activities, there would be rubrics, there would be questions to think about when evaluating the, you know, whatever whatever was subject to the peer review. So that was also helpful for the participants to you know, to perform the when they were performing the peer review.
Thanks. That sounds great. Next thing, I'm basically going down this lovely poster here, and the last bit is talking about the environment, and I'm immediately drawn to, because we've talked about this on EduTalk quite a lot, the open word, which is there a couple of times, as in open source ICT tools and open content. Do you want to come and say a wee bit more about that?
That's again kind of in line with the CMOOCs mentioned earlier.
Mm.
That the content offered or produced is often open education resource. That particular MOOC hands-on ICT is a result of an EU project, and it is offered as something that you know people can take away and even. Reuse, recycle in their own context.
Mm.
And actually, the lady Ian mentioned, Natalia, she is actually now leading the MOOC in Russian.
Oh.
So she has, not so much adapted, but she's translated the activities and any most of the activities, so that Russian-speaking participants can do the MOOC, and she's leading it and running it in Russian. So that is probably the best evidence of you know how quickly that content is being reused to make it open and accessible to a wider audience. And I think also in this vein, the fact that it was run in 7 languages.
Yeah.
So for 7 different communities, that also made that meant that it was open to a wider audience, what the team is planning right now is to kind of adapt the MOOC to a face-to-face delivery, so a short workshop, a 2-hour workshop, which will introduce the participants to the idea of the design inquiry of learning and kind of provide a very condensed version of the experience that mostly probably in form of the ideas and of the whole approach to designing technology.
Yeah.
Various activities and give them a little bit of a flavor of their, you know, peer collaboration and working on something with each other.
Mm-hmm.
So that just a couple of examples of how it has been reused or might be reused in the very near future.
So I mean that sounds really interesting, especially the 2-hour one. Although it maybe would make my head hurt a wee bit. Would you expect people that are doing the 2-hour one then to go on and join in? The MOOC afterwards, or
no? I think it's because at the moment, I mean, the project is finishing, so the MOOC as such is not going to be run unless somebody, you know, is going to undertakes running it in the future. I'm actually, for example, myself interested in adapting mm-hmm. it for the needs of language teachers, and I would be quite interested in running it in the future for language teachers because that's my background. But the face-to-face activity is more to familiarize the participants with the toolkit, so with the idea of the learning design, using the Learning Design Studio framework, which is the cycle I mentioned at the beginning. So you kind of define your educational challenge first, then you investigate, then you kind of review what has been done in similar contexts, and then you start coming up with solutions, and you create a prototype, and then you evaluate and reflect. So that framework of you know creating a technology related or enhanced activity. So I think that's the main purpose of the face-to-face activity.
Right, and you're saying you could take that then and adapt it, and this lady has done this in Russia. And it are the materials, I'm presuming, licensed so that people can do that?
All the materials used on the MOOC are, open education resources. So,
brilliant.
So they can be reused. And then it's just a matter of either adapting them or well, in case, for example, that Russian MOOC, you know, translating some of the materials. I mean, that was done on the MOOC in October as well for the other communities, because all the material, the initial idea was that the materials would be offered in English, and the interface is in English as well. But the interactions and the discussions and, let's say, whatever artifacts the participants create, that would be in the own language. I mean, French, for example, Catalan or Spanish. But then it turned out that actually there was a need for some of the materials to be in either Spanish or Catalan or any of the seven languages. So the facilitators were translating some of the materials just to help the participants engage, you know, even with the content on a deeper level.
Brilliant. That sounds just really great that the course can sort of live on that way afterwards and be picked up and, I guess, picked to pieces and bits taken out and things. The other open word in your environment is open source ICT tools. And have you got it? Did the MOOC have a particular philosophy about choosing those for any reason?
I mean, I'm guessing here that would be, again, to make it reusable or, you know, recyclable in the future, because, for example, that ILDA environment, which is Integrated Learning Design Environment, we've been using it and we've had templates to help the participants come up with the you know, artifacts and proposals, but that can be now taken and by somebody else who wants to run the MOOC, and they can adapt those templates and they can use the integrated learning design environment to create their own. So and the same with the Canvas is, you know, accessible to all. So this means that you don't have to run the MOOC as it is, but you can adapt it, and you can adapt the environments using the changing the code whatever in order to suit your particular needs or the needs of your audience, of your learners.
And would the learners encouraged, if they were making artifacts or whatever, to make them use an open source software, or were they, you know?
Shall I go there?
Yes,
please.
It depended on what you were doing. There was no encouragement specifically to use open source stuff, but clearly a lot of people do that. The people who are more experienced will have familiarity with those and will tend to do so. I guess another way of looking at open is the degree to which you make your learning visible to other people and the artifacts that you produce. We were, again, encouraged, and the majority of people that I saw did make the results of the activities, the outcomes, visible to external audiences. So although the environment within which we were working was in some senses closed, you had to register to become a participant on the course, you could still make everything that you produced visible externally, and the majority of people did do that.
That's great. So we've been running for about 40 minutes now. Been just very interesting, but I realise time's gone by. I'd just like to give you both a chance to see if there's any other things you think are worth saying, and maybe just a sense of, is this going to be available again? That sort of idea, because I'm thinking that there's probably quite a lot of people out there that would benefit from this sort of environment, because we're all, as teachers, educators, been put into a position where we're having to use ICT and been able to do it with some sort of design behind it. Sounds like a great idea. So is there any sort of summings up?
I mean, if I just to respond to what you've been just saying, the course itself might not run, but I think that the team would be delighted to hear from people whoever would be interested in taking it further. And actually, we would be happy to deliver even that face-to-face activity to any school or university or any other educational institution, in Scotland or in wider in the UK. So those materials are freely available, or will be made available when they are ready. As I said, the project is just about to finish, and there's an opportunity, there's a chance that you can, as an educator, you can just take it, get in touch and take it further, adapt it or run it as it is.
And
because it is, as you said, I mean, it is a great. It's a good chance of it's a good opportunity to think of how to integrate the technology, but not just for the sake of a wow effect or using technology, because these are the times we live in and everybody is using technology, so I should be using technology in my classroom as well. But it's actually integrating it and such with the kind of users, so your learners' needs at heart. So you investigate your context, and then the technology is used in such a way that it serves the needs of the learners, of the educators and learners working in that particular context. So it's not the technology for the sake of technology, but it's technology for the sake of education.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds great. And I think quite often that as educators, we don't as often as we should go through this process. We just see something interesting and chase it a bit. So yes. I think it'd be really great to get more people involved in this sort of activity. Ian, any last...
I guess the thing that I'd like to sum up by saying is just an incredibly big thank you to all of those who were working behind the scenes and in front of the scenes to actually make it happen. It was a phenomenal undertaking. It was incredibly well designed from a pedagogical standpoint. What we learned were the three elements, really, with technical skills, technological skills, pedagogical skills, and content knowledge, and it brought all those three together. So it really was well designed from a learner's perspective. As we've referred to earlier, it was well supported, both technically, so there were people working technically in the background to help us out when things didn't go as we perhaps anticipated, and then also with our learning. It must have cost a fortune. I can't imagine how expensive it was to put together, and maybe it just worked a lot on people's goodwill, and we all hopefully learned something from it. Yeah, I'd jump at it again and given half a chance.
I think that's a huge sort of endorsement, Ian, because you have been teaching a long time and you've been using ICT a long time, and are somebody who's well known and respected for just a depth of knowledge. And if you can learn something out of this MOOC, I think that's a pretty good recommendation. The MOOC material is still at handsonict.eu. I'm guessing it will stay there afterwards.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then the site will be updated, and so I mean it's just the project finishes very soon. So the reports are being written, the written materials are being put together as well. For example, a poster for that face to face activity and materials for the participants and the facilitators for that face-to-face activity as well, and that's going to be made available to the public. So, please keep checking the site.
Keeping set.
And the updates.
Is there any? I'll put the link in with the archive and the podcast. Is there any other links we want to go in there, or would be useful?
It might be an idea.
I think.
Mm-hmm. Sorry, Yanis.
There are links to the to the Canvas, for example, but they are all in the on the site,
right.
So you can easily access those links from the Hands on ICTEU site.
Brilliant. And Ian, you are at Ian in Sheffield And Anya, are you on? Are you a Twitter person? I couldn't.
I am a Twitter person, although maybe not very active.
Oops, I think the Skype sensors just censored you, breaking up. So, can you hear me okay, Anya?
I can still hear you okay, John, but not Anya.
Yeah, it's just crackling up. I think we're having a wee bit of Skype trouble with Anya, I'm afraid. Not sure she can hear us. She's disappeared. So.
Okay.
Okay, so it's probably the only thing I'd really had to do with Anya was say a huge thank you to her, and yourself, of course, Ian. It's always great to have a wee chat. This MOOC just sounds great.
Certainly was. I'd recommend it to anyone, to use in the way that you choose, as always with MOOCs.
Yep. Super. And I think we'll just kind of wrap it up there. Only left to say that if you look at edgetalk.cc/upcoming, you'll see the shows that are coming on in the future. And I'm just going to hang up Nicecast. So, good night.